Are we clapping? Do we have to clap?
I can't clap. I have Hamantash in my hand.
Well, then put the Hamantash
in your mouth.
Down.
And someone else will count down.
Hamantash in your mouth.
3, 2, 1.
I think I might have been early. I'm so sorry, everybody.
Hello, folks and friends, and welcome to a very special Q&A episode of Tales from Grevlon. I'm your Talekeeper, Thomas Flans. I'm joined by three people who I'm told definitely know what Q&A stands for and are about to share it, starting with Talia Shatsky.
Am I supposed to answer this question?
Great.
Talia Shatsky, classic and Jurassic, rar.
I love the rar!
Rar!
Katie Siegel.
Katie Siegel. Reflective and prospective.
Ooh, I wonder what you're prospective for. And Sam Kitsial.
Sam Kitsial. It feels weird saying
that. Yeah,
it really does.
It's very funny. I'm really enjoying it.
Sam Kitsial, dormant and misinformant.
Wow. None of those are what Q&A stand for, because Q&A stands for question and answer, which is what we're doing today.
Talia almost ruined your bit by asking.
Yeah, Talia almost ruined my bit by asking if you're supposed to actually answer the question.
I don't know. How am I supposed to know? No one told me anything.
Full disclosure, we were considering not having adjectives when we introduced ourselves, and Thomas was like, no, I need this bit to happen.
Thomas is like, wait, I have a bit.
Wait, I'm a bit.
It relies on your adjectives. Don't lose your adjectives.
We can't repeat the Tim Robinson bit we did literally when we were talking about this before.
55 adjectives, 55.
We are coming to you all shed of the pretense of our characters, shed of the pretense of the world, just coming to you, us four, as human beings who make this podcast called Tales from Grevlon. Let me take the name of the podcast
again.
Tales from Grevlon.
There you go.
Great. It's not like I've said it a bunch of times while recording this podcast.
No, you actually only say it once. We just put it back in.
Yeah, that's
back.
True. That's true.
Kitty just, like,
this is going to be so kooky because, like, we've talked about how we have night energy when we record Tales from Grevlon at night. But I feel like even Talia's doing some kind of dance right now.
I will say I'm standing. So standing.
And I'm also standing.
Different.
So anything goes.
Oh, God.
You're just going to get us raw.
Unfiltered.
Another adjective.
55 adjectives.
This bit will be very, very funny once Katie comes up with a second thing for there to be 55 of.
That's all you need.
55 questions.
That's all
55
you need,
answers.
Though.
55
you
questions.
Oh,
55
very
55
good.
Answers.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's good.
There
that's
you go.
Good. Team effort. You can take full credit.
Sounds like a great segue to our very first question.
Woo!
So this comes from Philip, F-I-L-I-P. Which player character intros do you prefer? Alliterating ones or the non-alliterating ones?
May I say something at the top of this?
Please.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I will say, when we first started conceiving of Tales from Grevlon and the intros, Thomas specifically said, pick any two adjectives. And I was the one who was like, I'm going to make them rhyme. And
oh, so you're a trailblazer.
Yeah.
100% to blame for making them more than necessary. It was just supposed to be two adjectives. And I said, that's not melodic enough for me.
There really is something deep inside that just makes you want to rhyme.
Yeah.
It's that groove. You got to feel that groove.
Which makes the rhyming ones even funnier to me when, like, you choose not to rhyme, which did happen a couple of times.
And the like, which I don't know if Katie gets
and the
yet.
Like.
I still don't get it.
It's still one of my favorite intros
it's
that
so
Talia
good.
Did. It was so funny.
I was
funny.
Editing, and I was like, oh, no, it hasn't hit yet.
And also, I mean, both ways that we, because I, for the viewers of home, was very nervous about recording this podcast, and both character-wise and alphabetically by last name, I come first.
Mm-hmm.
And so no matter how it broke down, I was always going to be the one to introduce myself first.
But then you get it over with.
But then I get it over
with. I feel
like
sometimes it can be even more stressful, like knowing that your turn is coming up, you know?
Knowing that you have to live up to what I said.
Exactly. And you set a high bar every time, especially
every time.
When you rhyme.
There you go. There you go.
And that rhyme.
See, it's deep inside. It's deep inside.
Rhyming is deep inside. Yeah, it's interesting because when we were coming up with like what to do for the intros, we're all fans of NADPOD, and a lot of the times they introduce their characters with rhymes, and so we wanted something that kind of matched the energy of having a little quippy thing to introduce the character, but we didn't want to just do a rhyme because that's what NADPOD does.
Yeah, I don't even think we weren't even necessarily like, oh, we should do what NADPOD does. I think we were like, oh, and let's do like little adjectives. And then I think for me at least, I don't think it was until we were like one or two episodes in that I was like, oh, this is kind of what NADPOD does.
They write whole poems.
Emily Axford, in her greatness, writes full poems.
Yeah, Emily Axford,
if you're listening to this, we love you.
We love you, Emily Axford. Literally, in case you ever listen to this.
Anyway, what did we answer the question?
I think in a convoluted way. Yes.
Alliterating ones or non-alliterating ones. It didn't even ask anything about rhymes. We just started talking about.
Yeah.
I think alliterating ones.
I like the non-alliterating, non-rhyming ones when everyone else is rhyming because it just cuts it so well.
Yeah, well, especially because you go last. So I think that's a good third
cap on the bit.
Yeah, yeah, when Dolly and I work really hard to like rhyme or be alliterated, and then you just say two words that have nothing to do with each other.
I got out of my habit of telling you guys what I was gonna say beforehand to make it actually surprising for you, so that there was some reaction for the show we record.
And yet, for this episode, you also still told us in advance.
Just fall right back in.
I love it.
Yeah.
So this question comes from Kevin Brown.
Hi, Kevin.
The question is, are there any mechanics in this system, Cortex Prime, that helps make Grevlon feel more real? I can start off.
Please.
Great question.
It's a great question.
Good question.
When Katie first suggested doing this, we wanted to make sure that it wasn't just like D&D, because there's a million D&D podcasts out there. And also D&D really lends itself towards very combat-oriented stories. If you look at any of Abria Iyengar's recent interviews regarding like her Dimension 20 season, she talks a lot about how like conflict and conquest are like a big thing baked into D&D. And so we wanted something that kind of matched the tone of Grevlon a little bit more. And so part of what I think Cortex does well is that it allows for mechanics beyond combat to solve problems. You're rolling with the way we kind of built out this like subsystem, you're rolling to solve problems with heart. And I think there's like something very fun, whimsical fantasy about rolling for heart. And that's like such a core part of Grevlon. And I think that like helped make Grevlon feel very tangible in this system.
Yeah. That being said, we did have to make some additions to the mechanics, specifically the concept of maxing, because we missed critting when we're playing D&D.
Yep.
But I think that was just more of a personal thing and not necessarily something to try to make Grevlon more real. That was just something to try to increase our enjoyment of play.
And kind of on that note, I love complications, because it's the same way you get the high of a nat 20. To get the like falling flat on your face of a nat 1 is very fun, and I think it's a little bit more situationally specific in Cortex as opposed to a 5e situation. Because it's, you know, it's not just you fail that specific role per se.
Yeah.
Having the complication that actively affects, you know, you
for a specific reason too. Even like, it's just like, oh, you just have like lower health, or even like, I mean, like in D&D, say, you know, we reference D&D a lot because that's what we play in our free time. But like, you know, you could maybe be like poisoned, or like there's some stuff, but like have like banana bruise, like having such a specific name for the complication.
There was one
to be like,
where Len had a sprained ankle, which loved.
I think we had a lot of ankles, which really
hits close to home, honestly.
Yeah.
But the things that were like, and my fellow PCs are incredibly talented here, they're able to, and that one, I think, ends begins and ends with that role, and complications allow you to extend that situation past just that one, you know, scenario mm-hmm. with the DM. So that to me is the thing that makes it feel the most real, because I'm able yeah. to pull these like new things in the world that I'm experiencing and make it affect future roles.
I do want to say really quickly that like a specific mechanic that I think helps make Revlon feel a lot more real to me is like the heroic success. The fact that you all are able to jump in and give this additional narration so that it's not just on me to, you know, make everything happen. And it means that things can happen the way you want them to, not just me interpreting how I think you want them to happen, which I think makes us a lot more communal. And I think kind of expands the tone and happenings of Grevlon in a really interesting way.
I agree. I think there is like a lot to be said about the collaborativeness of Cortex Prime versus D&D. D&D is very, this is the dungeon master. These are the storyteller.
These are the yeah. people in this world.
These yeah. are the people who mm-hmm. are helping move that story forward. Whereas Adventures in Grevlon and Cortex Prime as a whole, it tends to like create a space where your roles are important, but you can see it from our episodes. We don't roll as often as you would if you were playing quite a few other TTRPGs, because a lot of our storytelling is done collaboratively. Like we do it, all four of us are contributing to the narrative that's happening. Yes, Thomas sets the environment, but then we like build on it and create further.
Which, as a little addition, is the way that we play Cortex Prime. There's also versions of Cortex Prime, or games powered by Cortex Prime, where there's a lot more rolling involved, and there definitely have been our roll-heavy episodes, which I know Katie's dad really likes.
My dad's favorite episodes. Yeah.
Shout out Katie's dad.
And my mom. My mom also and his mom.
Shout out all of our parents. Shout out Katie's mom.
Shout out Talia's mom and dad.
My parents are Thomas's huge fans, and in fact, their favorite part of the podcast is, you guessed it, Talia.
Talia. Amazing.
Yes, really.
I was just being annoying, but wow.
No, legitimately, it's so you. Fun. It's you, Talia. Yeah.
Padarak is my dad's favorite character. I have a question.
Yeah.
Go ahead and ask.
What was everyone's favorite episode of the season? Episode and or moment. And everyone pulls out their phones and starts looking at episodes.
I'm just going to start listening to
all of our episodes again. Hold on.
Yeah, let's just pause for a little over 13
hours. For Talia to listen to the episodes, because Talia doesn't listen to this podcast.
Yeah, we know Talia doesn't listen to this podcast. I think I've said this on the podcast before, but it has continued that I will like reference a very recent episode and Talia will be like, wait, that's really funny. What? Or like, that sounds like something Ash would say, and then it was something that Ash said.
Yeah, and it's always something I would say.
So I'll just start off by doing the annoying thing, which is like, you know, I can't really pick a favorite.
Oh, God.
My favorite episode would probably be episode 6.
I knew you were going to say that.
Oh, man, you stole mine.
Lost All right, I'll find something else. Plant episode.
That's a great one.
And it's a really good one because I think for me, there was a lot of the collaboration that we were talking about where the players were coming up with what the obstacles that they had encountered the day before were. And then I also got to do some fun thinking of like, oh, what would happen 12 hours after they encountered this thing? What's like the logical conclusion to what was happening here? And so them having to undo the accidental damages that they caused, I thought was a really fun way to explore that episode.
We also made a lot of animal noises.
There were a lot of animal noises, which was a lot of fun. And then as
very difficult to transcribe.
Favorite.
Very difficult.
I'm sure.
Oh my God, yes, wait. I did want to say this. Can I just take a quick moment to shout out Sam Kitt?
Yes.
For doing all the transcriptions.
Please
for
don't do
all
this.
Take
the praise, Sam
Kitt. Talia will take full credit.
The transcripts are so
good. I'll give
Talia
full credit.
Legitimately, transcripts are such an important accessibility tool, and they are so well executed by Sam Kitt, and so thank you for that, Sam Kitt.
Sam Kitt will be like, "This is the most grueling work I've ever done, and I love it." I'm like,
I have found
man.
One spelling error, and I'm not going to tell you where it is. No, can you imagine?
Wait,
that would be so mean. That'd be so mean. Sam Kitt would literally stay up all night reading through all of
them. Spelling errors, I wouldn't be surprised about. I am dyslexic. That's
why are we making you write the transcript?
Yeah, we have.
Yep.
It's like making the guy with asthma. Beatbox.
Oh, no. Would you be also dead?
Good callback.
Good callback.
Good callback. Yeah, but yeah, Sam Kitt always kills it with. Okay, just a little. I just wanted to do that little shout out when you mentioned the transcripts.
Thanks.
Continue.
Yeah, yeah. I was gonna say episode 6, but I am going to jump back to episode 2.
That was mine.
This is why I jumped in. This is why I jumped in. Throw elbows.
You gotta get in there.
No, I really liked episode 2 because it felt like we had done a couple, recorded a couple episodes of this before we actually, you know, published anything just for us to, like, test and get comfortable with it. And I think episode 2 was the first time I walked away from recording being like, wow, that was great. That felt really, really good. And then listening to it and working on the transcript and all of that, that felt like that was the moment to me that it all came together. And that was mm-hmm. that was a really mm-hmm. fun feeling.
My favorite moment, if I can switch from episode to moment,
yeah.
there's one scene, which I'm sure everyone remembers very well, is the the one word story in
yes.
episode 4.
I swear to God, right? I was going to say and that. We're all just like connected.
Yep.
Brian.
Literally the moment I was going to bring up.
It's such a good moment.
Because leading up to that, for those of you watching at home, because that's how this works,
they might not be at home.
For those of you watching on your commute to work, keep your eyes on the road. I have zero acting experience, zero improv experience. And so I made a joke right before we started that where I said, get ready to hear the word and said like 4 times in a row. And then I somehow maneuvered myself into going first. I don't know why I did that. And I started out with and. And I thought that was the funniest.
It was very funny.
It was a great bit.
Go to our TikTok.
That anyone has ever said.
That everyone has ever said. I really enjoyed making. I always try to make you guys laugh. And Thomas's parents.
You do a great job.
Yeah. But I always try to make you guys laugh.
Yeah, that moment when I was editing that episode, that would be like my little special treat. Like if I. If I, like, was working for a little bit during, like, working on that episode, I got to, like, go and listen to that and have a little giggle. Like, I've listened to it so many times now, and it just did not get old, no matter how many times I re-listened to it. It was just so good.
That was it. That was a great moment.
It's such a good moment.
That was my moment. Oh, well, speaking of things that made me laugh so hard, I cried while editing.
I know what it's going to be.
I don't know what it's going to be.
Oh, no. What is it going to be?
Stop hitting the mic.
I'm sorry, I'm laughing trying to be tonight. It is Patarax. What color is my underwear?
That's so good.
Yeah. Patarax, what color is my underwear? It's so good.
It literally, like, I would, while I was editing, it was really like I literally started making myself like I'm like listen to this and try not to laugh. Like I was doing my own little try not to laugh challenge and I could not do it. I think every time. Oh my God, it really got me. I made a version of that, a video version of that that I sent to the group where it like zooms in really close on Sam Kidd's face when he says that. And it's really funny.
The one fun like Ash as a character talks a lot. But Patarak doesn't, I think, as a character, and that's their dynamic. Mm-hmm. And Len is like in the middle, yeah. which I really yeah. enjoy. So just when Patarak, when Sam Kidd comes just up with like the funniest thing you've ever heard in your life, it's yeah. so unexpected and hits so much harder. It's so funny to me.
You literally acknowledged it like it was in the Birder episode when Patarak was like, that's just kind of my thing in the group. Like, I don't really talk that much, and then every once in a while I have a zinger. And I was like, that's literally what it is.
Yep.
And then you got accused of birder because you because you don't talk that much.
Because I don't talk that much.
One of my favorite moments, for two reasons, is in Worf's Up, episode 5, which had our wonderful guest of Leo Lyon, who is one of my dearest and oldest friends.
Hi,
I love you so much, Leo. And it was so special to have Leo on. And so that's like the first reason why this moment was so special, was getting to do this improv with you three and with Leo, who I've been doing theater with since 2013 or something like that. The moment is when Kelp is talking to the bullies, and one of them is getting like really like transcendental with his like talking about like making sandcastles, and Kelp is like, "Oh man, I can learn so much from you, dude." And then the dude's like, "Well, yeah, but you're an old fogey." And Kelp's like, "Oh right, I forgot, you're my bully."
You're my bully.
it made me laugh so hard whenever I think about it.
I loved having Leo on. The joke that we were making was, it felt like Leo was such a great first guest to have, because as Thomas said, they literally teach improv to children.
Yep.
So, and I am that.
So, and we are Same. Literally children. Same. So it was like great to have Leo on, who has experience wrangling children who just want to like do, I imagine all kids who do improv do is just, you know, they just want to
run around and goof off.
And then we had another guest this season, Maya Mitterhoff.
Our Maya. Love Maya.
Hi Maya.
Who's also Maya. A delight. And I think like equally but different way, because like I said, I think it was good that we started with Leo, someone who has experience teaching improv to kids, and then we had Maya, who just kind of like was at our level of being a kid doing improv
like, in a completely new system, which was also very fun.
It was all of our first time playing Honey Heist.
One is like second or third of like favorite episode from the season, because Honey Heist is so
that was
fun.
A fun
and having
episode.
Maya on was so good.
And just Maya 100% just like jumping in with frankly just a bear. And so
who was also like, she also teaches or has taught children theater.
That is also and true. Like, I think that all of our guests should be people who have taught theater improv
to children.
That's what we need. Someone who has a lot of patience and creativity and imagination.
Yep.
So that's our standard for guests from now on. But yeah, two really great guests. Talia, do you want to ask a question?
I'll ask a question. This is going to be a Katie question, because I've been interested in this for a while. And what is your pour two?
Oh, mon dieu!
No, I would love to hear more. I would love to hear your creative process when it comes to writing the music of this universe.
Also, this is like
works.
Katie shouted me out. Sorry.
All
Talia,
of the music
finish
is,
your question.
Well, no, all of the music is originally written, composed, produced, sung.
Song by Katie Siegel. They're all live
singing?
Vocals. Katie doesn't use like music or instruments
rapping.
For any.
It's
all
acapella. Every song, every music that you hear is just coming from my mouth.
Wow, so impressive.
Yeah. Also,
what
on top of writing and producing all the music, Katie edits all the podcasts.
Yeah.
She does a lot of work for this podcast. And it's all
I get to come
good.
On here and be funny for an hour with my friends. And then Katie, Sam Gidd, and Thomas together spend so much time before and after the recording process.
Talia is our podcast princess.
Yep, absolutely.
Comes in, records, clocks out, doesn't listen to the episode.
I only listen to my bits.
Only listen and then skips as soon as someone else starts
That's
talking.
Much funnier.
That's so funny.
What was the question? Oh, music.
Yes, music.
Music, and also we can. I mean, because Sam kind of mentions this, we can lump editing process in together. What is the post production process like for you?
Yeah, I can talk about the whole post production process. The PPP, as we call it in the biz. Thomas didn't like that one.
No, not at all.
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Okay, Talia liked it. Great. Sam Kitt? Middle of the road?
Yes, I'm in the middle.
Yeah, okay. Great.
There's a lot of strong opinions. I feel like
someone's got to keep it in the
middle. They're baby-bearing it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Just right. So I start out with a rough edit, which is just cutting out all of the, you know, the sidetracked moments, the bits that don't work, the figuring out, you know, doing the math with
Talia
the dice.
Staring off into the distance.
Talia fully turning around in her chair to look out the window as she's trying to think of what to say. All of those bits, all those great bits that some of them do end up in bloopers. Oh, I might do a blooper reel. We might do a public blooper reel. I send bloopers of these guys after every episode, but maybe there's some nuggets in there.
It's my favorite part of any episode coming out is getting the bloopers, because Katie also edits them together masterfully.
I may do a blooper reel of some of those golden moments. And then that's when I send it to Samkit so we can start working on the transcript, because it does take a bit. And then I go back in and do my clean edit, which is just like, you know, any little bits, you know, smaller things, like, or maybe final decisions, like, yeah, we're actually not going to keep this in, or just like cleaning up any like audio pops and stuff like that. And then while I'm doing that clean edit, I'm also making notes of timestamps for music, just like any ideas that I have for music. Usually for an episode, I'll have like 1 to 2 original like themes. At least that's like the pattern that I eventually fell into. And then there will be some moments where it's like, oh, this is like an intense moment. Let's throw in like the Funky Bale theme, because that's a very like intense song, or like the frantic Hydra song theme, you know. So I'll be like, oh, this is a good moment for a song that we've already used. But
oh, we did have live singing, actually, and it wasn't you.
Oh, yeah, it was Samkit singing the Hydra song, episode one.
Yeah.
And Samkit always gets a writing credit whenever I use the Hydra song in an episode. Samkit, if you look in the description of the episode, Samkit always gets a writing credit.
Oh, nice.
That's very sweet.
Do you guys look at the song names in the description?
I have, yes,
I haven't the last.
Can't say that
times.
I
have. You seen the? Okay, because no one commented on the last one, and I'm curious. In real time, I want you
Wait,
to.
I'm gonna pull that up right now. Hold on.
I don't even know how to do that.
Oh no!
Oh,
no,
Katie!
Katie, come on! No. My greatest shame! My greatest shame!
Okay, the Festival of Foff Fugue in F major.
That's really
is
good.
Phenomenal.
That's really
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you. And that's actually it is an F major, which I don't actually really know what that means. Great. I just know that in GarageBand you can like choose, so I just made it F major.
You're so good and smart
that's
and cool,
great,
Katie.
Yeah,
and then the other song is called On the Steps of the Phallus, which is a parody of On the Steps of the Palace from Into the Woods, but it is, of course, referencing...
Shout out Stephen Sondheim, rest in peace.
Shout out Stephen Sondheim, rest in peace. But it is also a reference to a phallus. But yeah. Oh,
it's a great bit.
So then I do the clean bit, and then I go do the music. So I have all these timestamps, and usually I have like 1 or 2recurring themes. So like, for example, let's say the Honey Heist episode, I think I was like, okay, so we're going to have like kind of a nice... happy like honeycon theme, and then I want to do kind of like a more heisty theme, and those, so I have those like in my head kind of close to the top of the episode, and then as I go through the episode I'm kind of like, okay, this is where we're gonna have the honeycon theme, or like this moment let's have the heisty theme. And some episodes got more complicated than others. Like sometimes I'm able to just like use one song on a loop. Other times I'm like, oh, like I think actually the honeycon theme, I think I got like, I did a lot with that music. Yeah. Cause like sometimes like when the villain guy showed up, like the music would go into like a little sinister sound. So I had to like go through every moment and like reshift around the notes and like recompose it instead of just using the same song over and over. But yeah, so then I'll do that and then I'll work on the music. And, that's just kind of feeling it out and the vibes. And sometimes it comes from like a specific place, or like I'm trying to do something specific. Like I said, like the heist episode, we've all heard like heist music. Like, you know, you've seen like the Ocean's movies or whatever. Like there's a specific like.
I've seen The Emperor's New Groove.
You've seen The Emperor's New Groove. We all know. What?
There's a scene where Kronk does his own like sneaking music.
Okay. And I'm sure that the music for that is what would be identifiable as heist music. And so I probably like was listening. I think I pulled up like the Ocean's 8 soundtrack for that, and I was just kind of like listening, just like to get a vibe. And then like say for like Worf's Up, you know, that was like the beach episode. So I was pulling up like Beach Boys songs, and I was trying to like get a vibe of like what is the beach sound like, you know? Oh, the what's that episode called that we were just talking about with the one word at a time story, the Acuminor?
The We Three King, or We Three Heroes. We Three.
That one, I think that was actually like maybe one of my favorite songs that I wrote. And I like that a lot because that was like, and I don't know, maybe I'll play it underneath as I'm talking about this. I'm not going to talk about music for too long anymore. I promise I'm wrapping it up. But like, there was like echoing sounds because it's like we're in a canyon. So like in a canyon is very echoey. And then also because there was like this wooden city, the city made out of wood. It was like this like wooden hit. So that was kind of like for the wooden city. It's just like little stuff like that. Like I guess I have a music background in that I've like played the violin and I did a lot of musical theater, so I understand music to like an extent, but I just really love hearing like composers talk about like, you know, little things in music, like, oh, this is a reference to this, or we do this because it's kind of like showing that. And I kind of just like take that and like just try to make something out of like just trying to like find reasons to make a song sound the way it does, if that makes sense. So I just want to say real quick, if I ended up talking for like too long about the music, then I'm just going to put this in instead. I love writing the music and it was really fun.
No,
I really enjoyed
the whole description. That was so great.
I could probably say so much more. I could literally like go through every single song and talk about it probably, but I won't. Oh,
that would be a cool special.
I actually do want to just say real quick. So I don't know, do you guys know that like, you've heard like the themes, like each of our characters have themes. Did you know this?
No.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, Talia said yes and then no. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
So that's
what I meant to say.
Just like real quick about the themes. So like in the first episode, I kind of had this in my head already that I was like, I want everyone to have like a theme because a lot of like, you know, things with characters have themes, like a certain character has a specific theme. Yeah. I don't know. I was just I sent you guys like the video of the Percy Jackson composer talking about like each of the big three themes. Like I just love stuff like that. So yeah, so I wrote the themes for Ash and Patarak that ended up staying the same, and then like the theme that I had playing during Lenril's introduction, I realized that it wasn't actually a Lenril theme. It was just a theme that was just like waking up in the morning, which is a theme that I have used since. A Tentless Morning is the name of the song. So it wasn't actually until episode 2 when I wrote Upside Down Handiwork, which ended up being Lenril's theme, because that was when I was like, oh, I need to actually write a theme for him that is like Lenril and not just like him waking up in the morning and realizing his tent was gone. But yeah, but Patarak's theme, which is A Turtle Made Me Late, and Ash's theme, which is Starting the Day with Work, those both make their first appearances.
Oh my God. Time for me to listen to episode 1. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Well, and you're going to recognize it comes up a lot. I mean, Starting the Day with Work, I think, comes up a lot in what's the episode of Ash at the talent school?
Love's Shrewd Favor.
Yeah, Love's Shrewd Favor. And in fact, I think I actually, Penjika has her own theme.
How dare you?
And it's kind of like, it's made to kind of like be like counterpoint to Ash's theme.
That's so
and I think
cool.
They actually like come together at one point, Katie, at the end of the episode.
You're so
again,
so
like I said,
good.
This is all just stuff that I just like have heard other composers talk about stuff like this. And then I just like kind of do it.
But
I didn't like invent the concept of doing stuff like this.
But the ability to like actually do it is insane.
I feel like, you know, like the Andy Dwyer quote from Parks and Rec that's like, I don't think I know how to read. I'm just convinced that I memorized a lot of words. Like, that's how I feel about writing music. Like, I don't know if I actually write music.
Is that
I just
also
kind
a
of
Nick
like...
Miller quote from New Girl?
Oh, you're right. That is Nick Miller. That's not Nick Miller. Yeah.
I've watched Parks and Rec a couple times. I haven't seen that.
I have watched Parks and Rec and New Girl both a lot of times, and their quotes get mixed up in my brain. Yeah. So, like I said, there's a lot I could say about the music, but we should move on because we have so many questions left, and I talked about music for so long.
Another question we had was Thomas, and I guess also Katie.
Wait, say the name of the person.
Oh, yes. This question is from Pigeon Rose.
Hi, Pigeon Rose.
Hi, Pigeon Rose.
Hi, Pigeon Rose.
Thomas and also Katie, did you guys do a lot of consultation? Or Thomas, did you consult a lot with Katie on the world building of Grevlon? Or were you given pretty free rein? And how tempting was it for Katie to include callbacks and references to Geosphera?
So if I can just take this one, Thomas. Something that people may not know is that in Tales from Grevlon, every time Thomas says anything, They like look to me, and then I have to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down if I approve of it. And if I don't approve of it, then they have to come up with something else.
Yep.
This is why Katie's job is also harder as an editor, is because our recordings end up being like 3 to 4 hours
long. Yeah, they're
every
really
single
long.
Time Thomas says something.
Yeah, because yeah, Thomas has said a lot of lore stuff that I don't like.
Yeah, yeah. And I've so had like, to then like spend like 15 moment. Minutes rewriting something because it was like pretty yeah. integral.
Real
yeah.
fans would know how many sons Grevlin has.
Yeah. yeah.
We don't even know.
I will also.
That was a joke.
Yes, that was a joke. I will also start my answer with a bit of a glib thing, which is ultimately I think Katie has had to stop me from having too many callbacks and references to Dear Lysphira, or like when we were like talking about during the show, I was like, how much do you want me to reference it? And Katie and we came to a good compromise of like, you know, Lenril's a character on the podcast, so there's going to be some reference to it, but just like it is its own thing, it should be able to stand on its own.
Yeah, I don't really I was never tempted to bring up Dear Lysphira or anything about Dear Lysphira unless it was like natural to the story. Like it was Thomas's idea to have that, the premise of we're trying to find the speaking plans because Lenril wants to catch Lysphira's show. So that wasn't even me being like, we gotta get Lysphira in there, you know? Like that was Thomas yeah. being like, let's get Lysphira in there.
Yep.
Something random that I just remembered, you know, back to the beginning of coming up with this show was before I told you that I wanted to play Lenril, which was something that I like pretty much from the beginning knew that I wanted to do, mm-hmm. you had been thinking, oh, we can bring Lenril in as like a guest
yeah,
character.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So you almost played Lenril.
I almost did play Lenril, which would have been a very weird alternate universe.
Wild.
Yeah. But then I was like, no, actually, I'm going to do that. And then we're like, oh, okay.
Fun fact, we can only record these episodes in the morning before Katie's voice reaches its natural register.
Yeah. Try doing the Lenril voice right now.
Hey guys, I think that's this good. Is like
yeah, yeah. Yeah. We've done it's, evening
I've,
records.
I've learned. I've gotten there.
I also yeah. that's fully a joke. We record at night way
yeah.
more than we do
way
in the morning.
Morning.
Yeah, we
morning,
definitely
yeah.
do. But we've done yeah. a few times. We recorded earlier in the day, and my voice was a little deeper, and I was like, "Whoa, gender."
Hey, there you go.
And with like the consultation, I have sort of free reign, like within reason, with like some of the wilder things, like big sweeping things with things Katie's already established. I'll check in with Katie on like we had a conversation for episode 12 about what titles the fairy kingdom's royalty would use, and we landed on all of them using prince. Regardless of gender, and so something like that with like a pre-established character or country, I'll like check in with Katie for something big. Other times, I will introduce a whole series of trade negotiations, like in episode 12, where I say it and it becomes canon, which is
what trade negotiations?
The like Fergen Pact with like different.
Oh, well, I remember you saying that you came up with this thing, this whole
lore thing
that you were going to send to me, but then it wasn't in the episode and you never sent it to me.
That's true. I will send it to
you
after
this.
You
just made up lore on your own.
I did make up
just
lore.
Thomas did for fun.
That's so funny.
So there are things where I have a lot of free reign and I wield it responsibly, I think. I've come up with...
Except for the suns and moons, yeah.
Well, okay, the moons has been established. The suns... We did as a bit once, and it has been a carried through thing that I think is very fun.
Not to insert Sam, Kid, and I into this conversation, but
no,
I think
please.
One of the things I love about these two individuals with Katie and Thomas is they, although Katie has made this world and Thomas leads us through this world, I think Sam, Kid, you'd agree with me, we get a lot of opportunity to add to the world building, mm-hmm. which is great.
Oh, for sure.
And Thomas,
yeah.
I think this is
like
going back to... The waterfalls, this is going back to how does Grevlin, to Kevin's question, how do you help make Grevlin feel more real? The fact that we mm-hmm. get to add to this world building, I think Sam, Kit, you came up with the animal noise in episode 6.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, I must.
I think
you
and part of the questions at
the
top.
Weeblops?
The
Blawlins?
Yeah.
The Blawlins.
something like that.
Blalins, Weeble, something. One of them.
Yeah.
And at the top of every episode, Thomas. It's probably true.
It was like the animal sound you and
came
the
up,
names.
Someone came up with the plants that like spring. I think
Sandy came up. Oh, that was, yeah.
And good, Thomas gives us a lot of opportunities to create things on the spot, which sometimes end up falling flat. I think like the waterfalls, although it, I think it made everyone
that did very... not the waterfalls were so great.
Say what you want.
It was a great
answers
bit.
To one of my questions.
It was just so funny because it was like a city and
it's that same thing where it's like because I always have to go first, I always have to answer the improv question first. Actually that's not true. That's I think you've mixed up the question order. I don't always go first.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of pressure to add to this world. That, you know, I've been handed this responsibility from Katie and Thomas. And like,
especially if just looking at me and I'm going to give a thumbs down if I don't.
Oh
like
my
it.
God. Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Like judge, jury and executioner Katie over here.
No, but actually, I don't think there's ever been anything that anyone's added, you know, anyone, obviously Thomas does the most, but I don't think there's been anything that I've been kind of like, like, you know.
I'm not
too precious about Grevlon, and anyone who's listened to Dearless Fira knows that I don't. Any world building, any lore that's revealed is like comes up in the moment, and I never do like big lore drops or like the lore of Grevlon really comes together in small pieces as this podcast, both podcasts on this feed progress. So it's not like I have all of this stuff in the back of my head that hasn't been revealed yet. So it's like there's not too much that, and like I feel like everyone here has a really good vibe of like Grevlon, and that's something we talked about at the beginning of the podcast too, the vibe that we wanted for this podcast, and my vibes of how I picture Grevlon. So I think that everyone like latched onto that pretty quickly, so I think that also helps me not be too precious because all of the ideas are like as long as they fit the vibe. And because I don't have like all of this lore in the back of my head that needs to be fulfilled, or you know, that it all works.
I keep thinking of more of my favorite bits. I'm like, oh, remember this bit? Yeah. I remember that
what
bit.
Did you? I also just thought of another one. What did you think of?
The burning down of the carnival.
Yes. Oh, burning down of the carnival is very funny.
Yeah.
What have you done?
The baker died.
The baker's fine. I put that clip on social media, so I've heard that bit so many times over and over again. What have you done? The baker's fine. You're right. He lives in our members. No! And it ends with, so how much do I weigh? So good. I think this kind of transitions nicely into another question we got from Cup of Tea.
Hi, Cup of Tea.
Hi, Cup of Tea.
Hi, Cup of Tea.
Which is... do you keep track of the improvised lore for Grevlon, like the holiday species and other such culture created in the moment?
Now is the time for Katie's weekly rant about
the Bible. Bible.
The Bible.
My rant about the Bible. Wait, out of context, that sounds really bad.
Have you accepted Katie as your Lord and Savior?
So if you know anything about television production, there's a big binder. I don't think it's actually a physical binder, but there's a document that's the
probably
show
once
Bible.
Once upon a time it was. Yeah, so I've had a spreadsheet for Dearless Fira since pretty much the beginning. I
it's
might
not
have
publicly
maybe...
shared, correct?
No, 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 no.
And one more for good measure?
No, 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 no.
Okay.
There's some unsavory things in there. No, that's
yeah. No, it could be, but I don't want it to be. But yeah, so I've had this spreadsheet that I made sometime during season one of Dearless Fira. And it was just, it's just keeping track of like everything. I have categories for, you know, like it says here, holidays, creatures, foods, people, you know, just like anything. And then there's just like a miscellaneous category that I really do need to go through the miscellaneous category and see if I can make new categories out of that. Because at this point, I feel like there's new categories. And so then when we decided to start Tales from Grevlon, I made this like nicer document for Thomas. Two documents, actually. One that's like all the Bible and one that's the Bible by location. So you can like see all the locations, like big places like Towering Forest and Poer and
the waterfalls.
The waterfalls.
The waterfalls.
What city was that even?
You guys didn't go to it in the episode.
We
so
wasn't even
I don't know.
It's probably in the Bible. So there's this big old doc now that we keep updating. So every episode of Tales from Gravelon and Dearless Vera, I go through the transcript, again, shout out Sam Kitt, and I find anything that could go into the Bible and update it. And that's how everything gets kept track of.
And let me tell you, when I got access to the Dearless Vera Bible for the first time, I kid you not, I teared up looking at it. It was beautiful.
Okay, calm down.
I kind of joke about this sometimes, but I like, you know, I knew Katie before she started doing Dearless Vera.
You're parasocial about me.
Yeah, I did a bit for a while where I had a parasocial relationship with Katie because I listened to Dearless Vera. And we were in a Dimension 20 group text together, and like that, and like beyond like doing theater together, I wasn't like super close friends with her. And so I had this like bit about having a parasocial relationship with her through listening to Dearless Vera. And so getting the show Bible was like it mostly made me feel very emotional because it was like a friend trusting me with something they created.
Aww.
I will say the one episode that we did for Dearless Vera where we got to see Katie do Lys Vera on camera was a wild situation. Like, I was like, oh my god, look, it's her.
Even when we were recording the speaking plant episode at the end, Katie did
very quick
good morning. Yeah. I can't even do it. But in that moment, I think all I three felt that way like, with we were all starstruck
with Bimble and what's his name.
I was about to say, you guys were also like that with Kimble and Bimble. And Bimble. Yeah. You guys were like, oh my god,
it's them.
It's them.
We love Lys Vera.
We love Lys Vera.
Here on Tales from Gravelon.
Here on Tales from Gravelon, we love Lys Vera.
You guys.
That was a long pause.
That was a really long pause. Tell us how she really feels.
Also, the Waterfall City was a Cuminor. Just in case.
It was? No, it wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was.
Cuminor is the wooden city in the canyon.
Get in the comments.
Guys, I'm so sorry. Hold on.
You really are a misinformant. What was your introduction? The
misinformant.
Misinformant.
You're living up to your name.
It all comes back. It all comes back.
Speaking of things that are in the show Bible, this question comes from Nathal Eki Epper.
Hey, sorry, read that name again?
Nathal Eki Epper.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
The question is, could Thomas share the entire list of names they came up with for the Burner Mystery episode?
And the answer is no.
Sam Kitt, I thought I told you to delete that question off of the doc.
Wait, did you actually?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, you're doing a bit.
I don't understand. I don't know if you guys know this, but this is a question that Thomas submitted to our Google
Thank
form.
Thank you, anonymous asker, for that great question.
The name is not a tailkeeper with spaces
actually,
in between.
Actually, it's just not tailkeeper because I thought
How would you know that if you didn't submit the question like you claimed?
Gotcha.
Oh, no.
Gotcha.
So I'll just real quick ramble through them. And,
should I take my headphones out? Just let me know when you're done,
No. Keep them in. And you know what? I give you all full permission to like laugh if one of them is funny or something.
I won't.
Rapid fire. Go through them. No explanations.
Okay, yeah. The purpose of this is that
we did the episode, the birder episode, and Thomas says to us at some point that, oh yeah, I have a list of like 20 birds I came up with. And we were like, oh, okay, cool. And I think you got to all of them
when
we were recording.
It's 16, actually, but...
Yeah, and then I ended up editing out a lot.
Kitty edited out a good portion of them. Okay, so, Under Over Flink, Redhead Garngle, Breadhead Garngle, Golden Crowned Waterfowl, Open-Footed Turning Pleek, Four-Toed Turning Pleek, Happy Sappy Standing Pleek, Bored Sapper, False Gollywaddle, Mean Bully... Ow, ow, it bit me so hard.
Mean Bully got me.
Tommy, I really like Mean Bully.
Ow, ow, it bit me so hard.
I liked Ow, ow, it bit me so hard.
By Ozira, this one's bite hurts so much more than the first bird, which was named immediately after Ow, ow, it bit me so hard.
For sure, obviously.
Dragon-breathed owl. That's just cool.
Is that just cool?
Wait,
one of the birds?
Cool? Part of the name?
Oh, okay.
That's not part of the name. That should be part of the name. Coal mining canary, jelly brained churn, and all above churn. And those are all of my bird names.
Yeah, and most of them are not in the Bible because they're technically not canon because they didn't make it into the final episode.
There's a lot of non-canon birds on this list.
So if you got, if there's an episode coming out in season two where it's the exact same premise.
We're going to have another birder episode. Another birder episode.
Thomas can finish the list.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, random asker, for that great question. I love sharing my bird names.
And every D&D podcast needs to have one bird guy, unfortunately, and that's the law.
Yeah. Insert the audio of Brennan Lee Mulligan yelling about birds.
Let's say I'm name five famous people, and I'll name five birds. I'll name 100 birds. Nobody wants your birds, Brennan. Please.
This is, I think, one of the question that we haven't really delved into yet. This Q&A. So I'm excited to hear what your guys' perspective. This comes from an enchanted listener with such clear... Hi, enchanted listener.
Oh, we didn't say hi, Natal Eke Eper.
We don't have to.
I'm not saying hi to them. with such clear comedic chemistry and enjoyment of one another's ways of showing up in this podcast, can you please share how you all came to know one another and how your relationships have changed over the season? Okay, well, Katie and I were the first to meet. We met, and I did this math the other day, in 2017, which is 7 years ago.
Ew.
This fall. I know.
Wow.
And specifically, we met because if it isn't clear, all four of us are theater kids.
Yeah.
We all met at Rutgers.
I feel like I hid that well.
So Katie and I met originally in student theater. I did stage management and backstage tech work all throughout college. And then we met Thomas, who became a part of my tech team in addition to being a great onstage performer. And then Samkit joined as well, who transferred in. Katie and I met 7 years ago, and Samkit and Katie met for the first time in person like 2 years ago.
I was an urban legend to Sam.
Because
they never met at school.
Yeah. I joined Cabaret immediately after, like the year immediately following Katie graduating. That was a weird way to
As soon as
that.
I left, Sam Pitt was like, thank God, now I can do <No, laughs> it.
I was like, I've heard so much about this Katie person. And then I had been friends with Thomas for a while and friends with Talia for a while. And we all started a home game together. And
of
in
D&D 5e specifically.
Of D&D 5e.
Because Thomas was like, because Thomas and Talia and I, we were all watching some Dimension 20 together.
Yeah.
And we were like, we want to play D&D. And then Thomas was like, we gotta bring Sam Pitt in.
The first time, the only time all four of us have actually played together in person.
Yes.
And did not acknowledge it until we were leaving. We were like, wait.
this is the first time we're meeting.
Yeah.
The first time y'all have ever met.
I didn't know how tall you were.
Very tall. For those of you wondering, Thomas and Samkit, very tall.
Yeah, well, I'm also short, so that everyone is like especially tall to me. But,
fair.
Well, I guess came to know each other, how we've changed over the season. I think there's a lot more trust that I put in these people. I mean, as someone who, again, has never... By the way, if you are thinking, if you're afraid of either starting a podcast like this or just playing D&D or any TTRPG and you're afraid that you're not going to be able to commit to role-playing, get people you can trust. Absolutely best piece of advice I can give, because when it just feels like you're messing around with friends in a silly voice, there's zero pressure. And so I have
People are going to be shocked.
I have no acting experience.
Well, not that, even that, but just shocked about how, you said this earlier, but about how nervous you were about this.
I was terrified about, you know, first of all, hearing my voice on recording was wild.
Well, which you don't, because you don't listen to the podcast.
No, but yeah, I was incredibly nervous to live up to... you know, the performances from my fellow PCs and my DM. Ash is a very silly character, and that's why I love playing her so much.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can be silly, and it comes out funny.
Mm-hmm. But Talia, also, like, not to go too deep into our own personal home game, which I won't, but, like, you've also, like, made me almost cry.
I think I have cried the most in our home game. I have shed tear, like real, real tears.
Yeah, Thomas makes Talia cry like every other session.
Well, okay, wait, hold on. Let's reframe that.
But yeah, back to, I guess, an enchanted listener's question. I think I have developed a much more trusting relationship with these people. I know I'm kind of monopolizing this question. I just really enjoy talking about the love that I have for these people.
So, yeah, no, I think that's a great answer. I think that's a great answer for me. Like, I don't have anything to add to that. I think you're right.
Honestly,
I think it goes the same way for me. Just, we've only gotten closer.
Amen.
I feel a deep ire for Sam Kidd after this podcast.
Well, no. That's fair.
I warn.
So sorry. Yeah, I warn. Yeah.
Thomas also, I will say, like, the relationship that I have with Thomas taught me how to play Dungeons & Dragons. Thomas and Brennan Lee Mulligan, I guess. But, like, Thomas most definitely.
I'm in good company there.
So, yeah, actually, like, Thomas taught me how to play every single TTRPG I've ever played, which I guess now is 5e, Honey Heist, and Cortex Prime.
Thomas and Griffin McElroy for me, but yeah.
There you go. So to have a teacher who is also a friend, who is also a leader and a storyteller, all be one person, is an incredible experience.
Wow. Yeah.
And to heap more praise on Thomas.
Oh, no.
Thomas also kind of obviously preps heavily before each episode. Thomas will be making notes, preparing characters, practicing character voices in their bathroom.
Making figure out the most convoluted names. Character, spelling name, spelling. Yeah.
And then giggling to themselves on the bus as they come up with a
hump. That's true. So, Thomas, how do you do that? How do you come up with episode premises? How do you prep?
It really depends. Sometimes I have a really clear idea of what I want to do, like the reverse escape room. With that, I knew I wanted to do a reverse escape room, and then a lot of it was like figuring out like what kind of puzzles would exist in a dungeon and like what the framing would be, and the idea of it being like a big ad for a breakfast place where they like do like that like subliminal marketing stuff, like pumping like sweet smelling breakfasty air into the dungeon to make you hungry, and then you come upon a restaurant at the end. Other times it's literally I'm sitting in front of the scheduling email being like, what's a good premise? What's like a premise that will like be fruitful for an episode of this podcast? And then I come up with something and then delete it all and then come up with a second thing that's much better. and then sometimes I literally wake up right as I'm falling asleep, write down birder mystery, and then fall asleep, which is actually how I came up with that pun.
That's fantastic.
That's great.
Coming up with like specific scenarios for your character to react to, and also having like such distinct and specific characters means that I also have to be a little bit more creative with coming up with episode premises, where like with D&D, what I can do is I have a monster that you guys are going to fight, and so I just have to build up to the monster. But because you aren't engaging in combat really at all, it means that I have to think outside the box a little bit more, like what is the like intended climax of the episode, who's the big bad of the episode, with things like Penjika or the bullies in the Warfing episode. But then sometimes the enemy is time, or you guys got lost, or you forgot a plant, and like the big bad is like a race against time. And then like filling out the episode details is just like coming up with like names of stuff. And also, oh, a big thing that I do is I literally will sit and stare at a map of Grevlon. Katie and her dad made a
It was going to be like a picture of Katie's face.
I pull up Katie's headshot from their website.
Actually, believe it or not, you might not have noticed this, but that map of Grevlon, if you kind of squint your eyes a little bit and tilt your head, it actually is just my face.
Wow.
Katie and their dad made a phenomenal reference map for us.
It needs an update. It's ready for...
We did create a lot of new things.
He keeps asking about it. He's like, we should update the map. He's listening to the podcast. He's like, we should update the map. I'm like,
But I will just like stare at it and be like, what's an interesting location that they've not been to before? Or like a place that might have a geographical feature that might be interesting to run into or encounter.
Like the waterfalls.
and then from there, like, I just think about like what the characters might want to do and try to like have enough prepared that I'm not left blindsided, but also not over prepared so I don't feel too married to any one idea.
If you guys want to play D&D, get yourself a Thomas.
Amen. Get yourself a Thomas.
Get yourself a Thomas.
Work on cloning.
There you go.
I think you are good at even in the moment looking at your plans and kind of like shifting them and seeing what the, you know, the decisions that we're making and kind of going off of those.
Mm-hmm.
You're very good at that.
Even when we know what the episode's about, I've never received more than a 3-sentence description, which I love that it's very much open world concept of like, this is kind of what you guys are have on your agenda.
Yeah. But it is nice to know. That's something that we decided early on that we wanted. Because we would do, like, during our session zero.
I think one of our session zeros, we had nothing.
We, like, went in, you know, we didn't know what Thomas had set up for us, which is usually how we go into games. Like, in the past when we played D&D and stuff, we don't know what we're about to get into. But we realized because we're trying to, like, tell a story in a set amount of time, it felt like we were spending too much time trying to figure out what Thomas wanted us to do. Like, what the premise, basically trying to figure out the premise what of the episode.
Can you imagine the birder episode?
Without I feel like we might have picked up on that pretty quickly. Honestly,
yeah, maybe.
Believe it or not. That one out of all of them, I think we might have picked up on that pretty quickly.
I know, I would have started like looking at birds too, honestly. Yeah.
A little peek behind the screen, we did a test session to see how the characters play together, and I'd only really run D&D beforehand, and so I didn't give them a premise. I didn't give them, or I like ran it like a D&D mystery, and so we ended up, I think, playing for like...
We also were playing it like D&D. Yeah, like, we kept asking like D&D. To roll to like investigate stuff, and that's not how it worked.
And we literally, I think that was like 3.5 hours.
Yeah. It was long. Yeah.
We spent so long getting to the mystery.
Or a cave collapse that we were trying to like
A mine cave-in collapse.
We were rolling too
much. It was long, it was grueling, and no one was having fun.
Yeah, it was
I was having a little fun.
Yes, it was a little fun, but it was pretty bad.
I always love playing with my friends. But
that's
right.
Yes.
That's when we realized that we needed to actually figure out how to play Cortex and Adventures in Greblon and not try to
And honestly, I can say after 12 episodes, I kind of understand the game.
I kind there of get it.
Same. I'm getting there.
Good.
From where we were at the beginning of the season to where we are now.
Yes.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
We got this one from Instagram. I didn't ask on Instagram if people were okay with their names being shared. So I'm just going to say this person's name was Lil. Lil, you know who you are. Hi, Lil. Everyone say hi, Lil. Okay.
Hi, Lil.
The question is, will the gang ever meet Lysphira?
Well, there's an episode of Dear Lysphira where they...
We call in.
Call in.
I will say part of like Ash's lore is that out of respect to her friend Len, she will never sign Lysphira because that's nepotism. And like that's too easy. So if that's what you're trying to figure out, if Ash is ever going to sign Lysphira, it's too easy for Ash.
Was something in character building that we had to be like, Ash trying to represent Lysphira? Like, it seems like someone she would try to represent, but then, Tali came up with the idea that it's like, no, she's already set her sights on Lenroll, who also does not want to be represented by her. But like, Ash has already committed herself to trying to get Lenroll as a client that she can't go after Lysphira too. It just wouldn't be right.
That's why also Ash never tried to represent Padarak's great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother.
Right. Grandma. Because she already represents
her. Grandma Mima.
But yeah, I mean, I think that we've all agreed that like they have obviously Lenroll's met this year.
Yeah.
Lenroll's met his sister.
Wait, he has?
Yeah, believe it or not. I think we've also said that I think that like Ash and Padarak like come home with Lenroll to the Towering Forest like sometimes when he like goes home to visit and you know, so they've all met. But there's an episode of Dear Lysphira where this group calls in.
Great episode. Go listen to that.
So there was a little conversation there. Yeah, that was wild to record. We talked about that a little, but doing the Lysphira, talking to Ash and Padarak as Lysphira was very different. And it was also my first time improvising as Lysphira. Because all of Dear Lysphira is scripted, and it was my first time improvising at her as her, which was fun. But like I've been, we're in season 4 of Dear Lysphira, so like she's pretty locked in. I don't think it was easier than I thought it was going to be. But it was
fun. Would also be hard for us to meet Lysphira because that would be a lot for you to keep.
Yeah, no, Lenroll definitely like couldn't be there.
it would be like, hey,
Lenroll's lost.
Lenroll and Lysphira are truly like the opposite ends of the spectrum of my vocal range. literally trying to go as deep as I can, and Liz Vera's like breaking everyone's eardrums. So it's really hardcore. Like when the little part in that episode of Dear Liz Vera where Lenroll is able to speak again and he's talking to Liz Vera, I'm like, thanks, Liz Vera. Hey, no problem. And like my voice is like cracking. I had to re-record some lines because I was like, this is not working.
That's funny.
Speaking of Ash's reason not to sign Lysphira, how did y'all develop your characters? What was that process like?
I enjoy speaking and talking, and I was like, I was kind of still in my D&D 5e mind space, and I was like, I want to be a charisma forward character. I want to be someone who might not think always before she talks, kind of Lenroll's leap before you look, but verbally. And so I wanted someone whose like whole shtick is trying to meet as many people as possible. I believe Sam Kidd came up with Gingle Possum, if I remember correctly.
Did I? Oh, I did.
You did come up with Gingle Possum, which is a great name.
It's so good.
And I think the dynamics of big, medium, small, I think fit the three of us very well. I think I was the last person to come up with fairy.
You think so?
So it kind of fit. I think I was the last person to come up with my character. Yeah, because I needed the most help.
We knew you were going to be a fairy, and Sam Kitt was kind of debating between a couple of different animals.
That's what I thought. I remembered us going back and forth for Padarak a little bit. So that's Padarak
was almost a bipedal owl folk, which we looked up some images of bipedal owl folk, and they were freaky.
Well, that was kind of like, I was like, listen, if you really want to be an owl folk, I'm not going to do a hard veto. I was like, I am kind of like a little scared of like big birds.
Same.
So I was like, if you really want to be, and Sam Kidd was like, no.
I wasn't that attached to, And when initially pitching the elephant, I had pitched being like the tall or the large, like big, small, big, medium, small.
Right.
I had pitched being the big, and
with Lenroll being medium.
Yeah, Lenroll being medium. And I think Katie, you texted me or talked to me about
Babar
the elephant.
I think that was when we were all talking together, because I remember being like,
I think it was as soon as
you were like elephant, I was like Babar.
Like Babar.
Yeah. So then Babar the elephant kind of became like the sort of visual cue for that character for me, or for Padarak for me. And then there was something had just recently come out about our cartography, or like I had been listening
there
to an episode
like,
about
yeah,
art
there was
cartography
like an art
in
cartographer who wrote in to Dear Lysphira.
And so I was like, how funny would it be to be not an art cartographer, but an assistant to an art cartographer, like an art cartographer's assistant who has reason to travel and kind of does the grunt work, but can never actually become an art cartographer.
That's the other thing is Thomas specifically wanted us to create characters whose occupations made sense for us to be
traveling
on the move.
So
I think our cartographer and assistants and talent scout kind of both have different reasons to be like exploring, you know.
Yeah
And then we did some work, all three of us, I mean Thomas included, but Thomas was facilitating, but all three of us did work to like find the connections between our characters and set up like rich backstories for ourselves.
That's how we decided that like Padarak and Lenroll went to the same school, so they knew each other from school.
Yeah, that's actually something that in the Cortex Prime handbook has a like really helpful tool that I used of basically like going through different kinds of connections. So looking at places you're from, connections you have from where you're from, connections that you have to each of the other player characters, and then mutual connections that you have with those people in addition to however you are connected to each other, and then other things happening to other characters and changes. And it's like this really collaborative process that allowed us to like kind of mold each other's stories a little bit as well.
Yeah. Well, and also the this is something that like has kind of just been mentioned casually a few times, but Padarak and the Bubble City.
Oh, yeah.
That was something that came up during this, which was like... I don't know, Sam Kim, if you want to say again, it's been mentioned a few times, but like so casually, like it's like, oh yeah, we all know this about Padarak, but it's just because we like Utah came up with it in character creation, and it's just like
so
we were just talking and we were like, where's Padraig from? And I was like, he could be from the marshlands, but that feels boring. What if he was from a city where everything was made of bubbles, but then all of the buildings disappeared?
No, that's not how it went at all.
Your first pitch, I believe,
believe your first pitch was you're from a city that burned down.
Yes, that's what it was.
That's what it was.
I'm gonna put up a finger here and be like, that's not whimsical enough for Grevlon. What else can we do? And so then was I the one who said turned into bubbles?
I think you might have been.
I think you turned into bubbles.
I was like, what's not as aggressive as burned down? How about everything turned into bubbles?
Exactly. And so then there was the whole thing of Padraig having to go live in Ecumenor for a bit and then, you know, whatever.
Yeah, because the city. And also how Padraig has to go for a run every time he's sleeping in water because it reminds him of the city. But then in episode 12, he did the bubble ride and that was kind of healing for him.
Yeah. Hey, we'll find out if that, you know, helps cure
Padraig
his running
is actually
thing.
Not coming back to season two.
Wait, this is news to me. His character arc is done. He's come full circle. He's ready to retire.
We're gonna rebrand.
Yeah, sorry, Sam. Okay, this is how we're letting you know.
Did Len ever speak on Tirithosphera?
No.
Yeah. You created a PC out of an NPC.
Yeah.
So what was that like?
Basically. Well, so I'll admit that like I never had a plan. I wasn't thinking that like, oh, like I'm going to do a TTRPG podcast with like people. But like when I, with Lenroll, every time there was a mention of Lenroll, and I think there was at one point where Lysphera, I was like, oh, I think Lenroll's like traveling with some people. Like that just started planting the idea in my head that there could be something with Lenroll. Like even not, I wasn't even necessarily thinking at the point like a TTRPG podcast, but like, you know, some like spinoff or like something. It seemed like there was a story there no matter like what it could possibly be. So again, like I'd said when, I pitched the idea to Thomas, I was like, and I'm going to be Lenroll. You know, like this is what like the whole idea is that it's going to be like Lenroll and his friends. But also not, obviously, I didn't want it to be like Lenroll and friends. I wanted it to be like this group.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So Lenroll was kind of already established. You know, there are certain things. Again, I have like the Bible. So anything that had already been canonized about him was written down and I had that to go off of. But definitely like his personality, I think, developed in... I had like a vague idea of his personality, but I think it was definitely sharpened like once we started actually like role playing and having interactions. I mean, I think that like Ash kind of brings out like the big brother in him. Like we see that. And then like I think like his interactions with like Padraig is more like, you know, like good buddies. Like we see more like playful, fun side. Like I said, doing Dear Lysphera, I never do more world building than I absolutely need to like in the moment. So I didn't have this whole big idea of like who Lenroll is. It was just whatever was necessary in the moment when he was mentioned on Dear Lysphera. So that was like a fun thing doing this podcast, was like fleshing out his character based on the interactions that he had with like his friends and the people around him. I'm kind of like that with like, you know, writing books too, that I find that I
pre-order Charlotte Isles is not a teacher.
Pre-order Charlotte Isles, not a teacher.
Please pre-order Charlotte Isles.
You could also get Charlotte Isles, not a detective, is already out.
Go buy it.
It's great.
I remember at the beginning of this podcast, Thomas tried to plug Charlotte Isles, not a detective, and I was like, okay, no, we're done. And now I think this has been growth that I'm letting everyone say.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to edit it out, probably, maybe.
Probably, maybe. That's really committal, yeah.
But I think I do really like creating characters based off of the people, how they interact with people around them. So I think that's, so Ash and Padraig have been a big, you know, as much as I have the things like the tattoo and everything like that, like the character kind of came out of the interactions with his friends and it just ended up working with the stuff that was already canonized about him.
The Lenroll that you've created is like, yeah, he would get a tattoo in Draconic that meant something completely different.
Yeah.
I like the reverse engineer of that is very interesting.
Thank you.
Just
a little funny anecdote, or I think it's funny, is that there is like literally, I had written a Dear Lysphera, and in that Dear Lysphera, there was a mention, Lysphera mentions that Lenroll doesn't read instructions.
And that has become a running bit.
Well, what I actually happened is I wrote that, and then I hadn't recorded it yet. I don't know how much time passed, but I had forgotten that I'd written that. And then, like, but I think it must have been pretty soon after, because there usually isn't that much time between writing a script and recording it. We did a Tales from Grevlon. Maybe it was, like, a week after I'd written that. And it was the Tales from, it was the Funky Bale episode, in which Lenroll says, I don't read instructions. Or, like, he's revealed that he really doesn't read instructions. And then it was time for me to record Eurylisphera, and I read that line, and I was like, oh my god, I forgot that I did that. So, yeah, Lenroll was really locked in. I will say that it was partially making fun of myself, because I very often do not read instructions, so it wasn't that much of a coincidence that I just came up with the same character trait twice. It was because I was just thinking of something to make fun of myself about, but...
Wow.
They're just a suggestion. When you're a professional you don't need it.
It's how you think they should be done.
This is really upsetting.
You were right here. You get me. You get Lenroll.
I think I wish I would have taken more of my backstory into account in this past season, I think. I think there's a lot that... I would have done all of episode one differently now, 12 episodes later. But yeah, anything you guys would have done differently?
Listened when Talia said time.
Oh my god.
Okay, are we gonna talk about that real quick?
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick. So for some context.
Oh, so you're silencing me again?
Let her tell her own story. It's women's history.
Tell my story.
I'll let you tell your story, but I want to give a minutia of context, which is that sometimes when my three lovely players, who are all very brilliant and talented and very smart, are talking amongst themselves, I will go back over my notes for the episode, figure out what we've done, what has not been done yet, what I need to move around, what I need to cut. So
sometimes they're updating their bird names list.
Not in that episode. Not in episode three. Okay? Not in episode three. And I'm like, reviewing things and making sure that everything's going to go smoothly for the rest of the episode. And so sometimes I'm not 100%, I'm like 70% listening sometimes.
And so... This was the escape room episode.
Yeah, episode three.
And Thomas had a riddle for us. And I think we timestamped this. I got the answer. I said it out loud very early on.
Genuinely within a minute. Like maybe less
of receiving
than.
The riddle. And just no one heard me. And if Katie does release the blooper reel, then I'm hoping that she will be able to include this.
I think that it was it wasn't a minute in, because what it was is we were all just kind of like sitting in silence trying to solve this riddle, just thinking. Thomas was updating whatever, looking at whatever. And then Talia just goes, time? And then we're all silent.
No one responds.
No one responds.
So I go, no.
Yeah. But it was really just because, like, I think Sam, Kit, and I were just like, that could be it, but, like, let's keep... But then, like, Thomas didn't have a reaction, so we were just kind of... Which, like, in fairness, like, you didn't say it in character. We were just coming up with ideas. So it was just all, like, a mess of, like...
I felt so bad afterwards.
Tali was really mad once we so no one knows this, because in the final edit I did a lot of finagling.
There's
with
a lot
one.
Of post-production
on that one, so we made it so that what happened was that, like, 5 to 10 minutes later, Sam Kit was like, how about time? And Tali was like, wait a second. So I guess what Sam Kit would have done differently was make a bigger deal. And I agree, that's mine too. I would have said, yes, Talia, that's a great idea. Time, lock it in. It would have saved myself a lot of editing.
What I would have done differently was know how to prepare a session.
Early on,
because I think some of our best ones have been like the very collaborative, very improv-y ones, and I have some... I mean, even things like,
it's probably why we all love episode 6 so much.
I generally think that's why episode 6 is like, so good. And, like...
Globally beloved.
I like all of the episodes we've done. I think there are some ones that are somewhat weaker, because I had a lot planned, or I had not enough planned, and it was, like, really aimless. And so having enough plan to keep people on track, but having enough gaps that they can be filled in with the improv, letting that sink in earlier would be like the one thing that I would have done differently.
I do actually have one thing I would have actually done differently, and it's not canonized that Padarak has to run every time he hears running water.
Yes.
I forget that's this good. Now, and now it's a thing.
I was actually
come up.
Literally thinking about that earlier today. I was like, I wonder if season two, if we could do like an episode that's like a quest to free Padarak
to remove
of this.
Padarak from
yeah,
his
to like
curse
get
something.
Him like therapy or like something yeah. to like keep him from having this thing happen to him.
Speaking of, what would you like to see in season two?
Great question. I think this will be your last question, right?
Yeah, I think that's our last question.
I think
question.
So.
Awesome. Season two, which I guess we haven't like...
Officially announced?
Officially announced? Or is this... I guess we're officially announcing
I guess, yeah,
it.
This is our announcement. We're doing season
Yay.
Two.
Yay!
I'll let y'all answer that question first.
I can start.
Yeah.
Please.
Do it up.
I think one of the... I don't know if you guys remember this. One of the things that I included in Ash's backstory is that she became a talent scout because she didn't think she had any talents of her own. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to see Ash have a talent.
Oh my goodness.
Thomas get a talent.
Furiously, I would like the audience to know Thomas is furiously taking notes.
Yeah.
I legitimately am because I want to know what you guys want from season
yeah,
two.
More
so I want to
bird
know
names.
That. I have yeah. added that. I'll be... Katie, you said it, so it's on the list.
No,
now.
That wasn't
oh
a
my
request.
Goodness.
too bad.
More butter.
More butter.
More butter. More butter.
More butter. It's on the list.
I thought it was interesting when Natalia was talking about how she wishes that she went more into Ash's backstory, because I would think that I think a big reason for that is because being a talent scout and like that whole like going along with that has. Like, you just do so much great stuff with it. And I think it also helps because just the way that that profession is set up and the way that you play it, that, like, literally everyone you interact with, like, that like that almost always ends up, like, coming out. And that's, like, what takes up. So I don't know. I don't want to, like, steal this from Sam Kitt. I don't know if Sam Kitt had something that he wanted to see in season two. What I want to see in season two is more our cartography stuff from Padarak.
Yeah. Yeah,
because I think we see a lot of the talent scout stuff from Ash, and then we get more of Padarak's backstory, like Bubble City and stuff like that. But yeah. I want to see more.
I
of
want
now.
Honestly, building onto that, I want to see more assistant stuff.
Yeah, oh, I want to yes. see more of Suvi.
More interactions, Suvi. Yeah,
Suvi.
Yep.
Yeah, I want to see more Suvi. She's cool. She's scary. Yeah. Mean.
She's scary. Sam, do you think you maybe want to see Padarak? Graduate from assistant to something higher?
That was another
canonically impossible.
Oh, I'm
canonically
sorry.
Impossible, but I think that would be kind of going off of what Katie was saying, off of the seeing more art cartography and what Talia said about the more assistant stuff, is seeing Padarak find a way to actually get into the art cartography course and not just be an assistant for the rest of his time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which he didn't know he was doing until the beginning of this season.
Right.
So I think that would be an interesting thing to see.
Kind of more technical. I want to use my talent. I don't think I've ever used my talent.
Yeah, almost, you got, I realized that
I
when
got
we were
close.
Listening to the last episode, in episode 12, there was a point when you and Sam Kitt both had a plot point, and Sam Kitt was about to use his plot point to help me. But then for some reason, we were like, actually, let's use Talia's plot point. But because I used your plot point instead of Sam Kitt's, then when I rolled a one, you couldn't use your talent
I couldn't
because
use
you
my
didn't
talent.
Have any more plot points.
I would also love to be able to roll
brutal.
A D10.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Leveling up.
I would love to be able to roll bigger dice.
Yeah, Thomas, do you want to share what you want to see?
Yeah, Thomas, what
two?
Do you want to see in season two?
I want to see more usage of more of the mechanics of Cortex Prime, because I think there's a lot of really cool mechanics that we've not really gotten to explore a lot. Part of that being me not spending as much time as I should, like reading the manual and like checking on rule
hey,
stuff.
You're in grad school. Cut yourself some slack.
I'm in grad school. I wasn't when we started this podcast, but let's not talk about that. I have a Google Keep list of like episode ideas, and there are a few that I'm like really excited about. But yeah, there's a lot of episode ideas, more like thematic episodes. Like I have a haunted house episode that I would love to do.
Ooh.
I have some more like.
Oh, I want to see more guest stars.
I would love.
Yeah,
to,
but only people who have taught theater
have
to children.
Theater to children.
Absolutely.
Oh, Oh, right. I will say one of my episode concepts that I know is going to get vetoed the moment I seriously bring it up is fully improvised musical episode.
No, no, no.
Yeah, you have to specify when you say vetoed, specifically vetoed by Talia.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Hey, remember when I said that I used to be nervous? That used to is.
Is, yeah, okay, got it. That's a closing tense. Nobody wants to see Len stuff. Wow.
Honestly, Len's just a guy, just a dude. Len, he's doing his thing.
That's what I was going to say earlier.
Oh, there it is.
I want to see more of Len interacting with, like, his family. Not just Lysphera, but his, like, his mom's and also any aunts and uncles, like, canonical or not. Like, just, like, extended family. I feel like that's really interesting.
Len has, like, see that. A list of, like, six or eight, like, friends from home that, like, I've not touched.
That was something that we did in backstory. Wow.
I've not touched that
the
at
twins.
All. And I want to do stuff with the twins. I'm so excited to do stuff with the twins at some point.
Oh my god, I forgot about the twins.
With that, we're going to wrap up our very special Q&A episode of Tales from Grevlon. Thank you all so much for listening. And thank you all so very much for listening to our season. It means the world to us that you tuned in to our little silly TTRPG show.
Talk about the
that
show.
That we have so much fun making.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You're being nice and I'm like, promote us.
Any last thoughts from anybody?
Tweet Talk about the show.
Follow Dear Lysphera on social media. What social media can they find Dear Lysphera on, Katie?
At Dear Lysphera.
On what platforms?
Oh, you know.
Was my question.
Oh, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter. We also have a Discord, the Chattering Grove Discord. The link to that is in the description.
We love you guys.
We love the Chattering Grove Discord. We get
love
a bunch of
Grove.
Fun questions there that we will
Some
continue
really
answering.
Really great fan art. Huge shout out.
Fantastic fan
shout
art.
Shout out to the fan art.
Yes.
I never thought I would get to a place in my life where people drew fan art of things that I created.
Legitimately same.
Same.
It's been incredibly
crazy.
Cool.
Same.
Thank
Fully
you so
hung
much.
A piece on my wall. It's great.
I love it. But yeah, follow. Please follow the show. Please talk about the show. Recommend to your friends. You know, we try to... We didn't really talk about this, and we won't go too much into it now because we're wrapping up. But, you know, we try to make the show so that it's, you know, very episodic and you can really just jump in anywhere. So, I mean, tell your friends during this hiatus, this is a great time to catch up on season one. Or if they just want to drop into your favorite episode that you want to recommend to them, they can do that and they won't miss much, except they might be like, wait, am I supposed to know about Bubble City? And then you can be like, no, you don't need to know about Bubble City. You're not supposed to know. We barely know about Bubble City.
I barely know about Bubble
and
City.
And follow our social medias that are linked in the episode description.
Yep.
Mine is at tall, yeah. The word tall followed by the word yeah.
Are you in public?
Now I am.
Okay, great.
Okay, I'm at Thomas M. Flans. It's linked in the description.
That's spelled
you
with a P.
You don't have to spell my name. Just use the link in the description.
I'm at Sam Kitsiel on both Instagram and Twitter.
Sam Kitt's Twitter header is art that I drew of our D&D characters. Check it out.
Yeah.
And my Twitter header is a tweet that I tweeted and is about me.
And my Twitter header is me giving an academic conference presentation.
Hey, Katie, what's your Twitter header?
It's a comment that I got from someone being like, they must call you Ms. Funny.
That's a great Twitter
header.
Well,
you showed them.
They were right. They do call me that.
Thank you all so much for listening.
I was just going to say, just to throw it back to, you know, the first thing we ever recorded, I think, don't listen to this episode.
There you go.
Very good.
Don't listen.
Stop listening.
Yeah, if you're listening to this episode, stop.
Stop.